This is News and Notes. I'm Ed Gordon. On today's roundtable, the U.S. is stepping up efforts against Venezuela and Black America's fascination with The Sopranos. Joining us today to discuss these topics and more from our headquarters in Washington, D.C., Republican strategist Tara Setmeyer. Joining me here in New York, Robert George, editorial writer with the New York Post, and Pedro Noguera, professor of education at New York University. I thank you all for joining us. Let's first of all talk about this whole question, Robert George, of the United States' battle against Venezuela and Hugo Chavez, which seems to be building and building and building. And Chavez is not stepping down. In fact, it seems as though he engages in this saber rattling with much glee.
Without a doubt, he has in many ways become Fidel Castro's protege in Latin and South America, and he with oil he realizes he's got a strong both an economic weapon and an economic tool which he's able to use regionally as well, and he likes to bait the Bush administration, Rumsfeld and so forth. And it's not surprising that he's being perceived from Washington as somebody that needs to be taken care of.
Pedro, here is clearly what the concern is from the Bush administration, and that is what we're seeing as growing ties between Venezuela and Iran.
Well, I think that's an issue, again, because of the oil. But the larger issue is the entire drift to the left of every country in South America, with the exception now of Colombia. And the reason why is because the utter failure of the so-called Washington's consensus. Argentina, the collapse of Argentina represented the collapse of U.S. policy in South America. Over 80 to 90% of people in Latin America are poor. They're coming to this country in droves. The United States has no answer for that. Now you're seeing countries in Latin America like Venezuela saying we need a different approach, and there's nothing the Bush administration can do about it.
All right, Tara, let me save you from going up front and suggesting that this is not a problem solely to the Republican administrations that we've seen, that the United States in general has really dealt with this region and this area in a way of seeing them as, quote, second world folks. Okay, that being said, I'm going to see if I can do it a little quicker than you were going to do it. That being said, what has to be done at this point?
Well, I think what we need to understand in this case with Venezuela is the relationship between Hugo Chavez and Iran is very concerning. A lot of people don't know, and I have Iranian sources that have told me that under Khatami, there was an arrangement between Venezuela and Iran to smuggle in Syrian and Iranian spies under the auspices of Venezuelan passports because of how difficult that has become through other channels after 9/11. Also, when Khatami visited Iran last year, Hugo Chavez chummed around with him discussing how they're going to build a strong alliance against the United States, and that he expressed an interest in introducing nuclear elements through the help of Iran into Venezuela. Now, these types of issues have been flying under the radar with the average American citizen, but the State Department and the Secretary of State, Condoleezza Rice, they understand the danger of having a Hugo Chavez-Iranian relationship in the Southern Hemisphere. And not only that, it's correct that there is a dramatic shift to the left, and there is a certain anti-American sentiment going on in Latin America, unlike we've seen in a long time. And what the Americans are trying to do with issues like CAFTA, we're trying to maintain a certain amount of economic influence in the region so that we have them on our side, because there's a shrinking cadre of American allies in Latin America.
Let me move us quickly, because we have an abbreviated roundtable today. We're going to do a salute in just a few moments to Miles Davis and his induction to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But what a lot of people are talking about, Pedro, is this fascination that America seems to have with The Sopranos, and in particular minorities, African-Americans, Latinos and the like, love this show. And we've seen historically the love of gangsters. While Tony has become the lovable gangster, is there any danger in blurring the lines here?
Well, I think there is. And I watch the show avidly, and I am both repulsed by him and what he represents, but also drawn to the show in a way that I can't avoid. And I think part of it is the combination of the mundane family life and the gangster life. And that appeals to many Americans, especially many African Americans, because we know that just lurking beneath the veneer of civility in America is this corrupt core, that there are many Americans who are involved in crime. And this depict, this is, Tony represents a very successful businessman. And he's so corrupt, he's so connected to major corporations and politicians who are at his bidding.
Tara, can we in fact allow for the great writing and acting that is a hallmark of this particular program to supersede the idea of the black portrayal of characters few and far between, but also the attitude given toward black characters? I remember a few seasons ago when Tony's daughter was seeing a black guy, he called him charcoal. So when you see this, it is an interesting juxtaposition between black's love affair with this and how we are depicted on the program.
Well, there's a certain element of truth to the portrayal of the mafia on The Sopranos. I grew up in North Jersey all my life around certain elements of that, and I see the truth behind the way they portray these characters, and I think that that's the fascination. I'd be interested to see where the demographics of what black Americans are attracted to The Sopranos, whether it's more of a Northeast urban demographic as opposed to the Southern or Midwest blacks, because of the inability to relate to these types of characters because it is so prominent in the Northeast. I mean, it's the mafia has been a fascination in America, black and white, across the board for many, many years because of the loyalty to family and then the criminal element of that. There's so many different aspects of these relationships that are fascinating. And I think that it is an interesting point to see that because Italian American mafia types are so racist against blacks, that that there's still such a draw to the Tony Montanas of the world, even though he was Cuban, but that whole gangster lifestyle has been a fascination with blacks.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, I think this is particularly true with the hip hop generation. I mean, it's not surprising. I mean, you know, we were just talking, you know, last week about the win of 3-6 Mafia at the Oscars or Mobb Deep. We talked about Tara mentioned Scarface as well. It's disturbing, frankly. I mean to the extent, frankly, if you want to look at it. At least in the mob, what we see in the movies with Sopranos and so forth, there seems to be almost a tightness of family where, unfortunately, on the gangster lifestyle that you see in hip-hop, that is actually dramatically, you know, absent, frankly. And I think if there are any, quote, lessons to be drawn, I think the young people are actually drawing the wrong lessons, frankly.
Let's move to what's an interesting transition here, but it speaks to the idea of how prevalent we are now seeing in terms of people, mostly men, but a growing number of females in jail. A woman has, in the true entrepreneurial spirit, Pedro, of the United States, created a new company creating greeting cards for a specific audience, those incarcerated.
I think it's a reflection of the fact that so many African-American families have relatives who are incarcerated and a desire to try to embrace them rather than than allow them to be isolated. We have large numbers who are released each year and there's no process for absorbing them back into our communities. I'm going to be at Rikers this week speaking to young people. And I know that that many of them feel completely abandoned. And too often when they come out, they are right back in because they don't have a way to reconnect to a life that offers some opportunity and possibility. So I think this is could be a step in the right direction.
The company is called Prison Expressions, and it allows for cards going both ways, from prisoners to family and vice versa. They range from the humorous, where's the money, is one of the titles of one of the cards, and the other, thinking about you, just a reminder to let you know you're not forgotten, Robert.
Oh, thank
not
you,
Robert.
You're not forgotten. No, I think it is a good idea. I mean, it is sad that it is something that is necessary. However, there was a news story recently though talking about how the families of the incarcerated, how they end up having to absorb some of these absolutely huge fees in collect phone calls and so forth from their loved ones. So, I mean, it makes sense that you would want to create another way of reaching the incarcerated and, you know, recognizing that they still have a connection to the outside world.
Tara, here's the interesting point, though. Albeit important to make sure that those who are behind bars still feel a connection to family, still feel loved, still feel all of what we, I think, as human beings need to carry on in a day-to-day existence. And certainly, if you're in prison, you need more of that perhaps than when you're out. There is this blurring of the lines. There is this badge of honor that many young African Americans almost take on when going to prison. Could this start to again continue to blur that line at all?
Yes, and this is one of those things that only in America. I have mixed feelings. At least she's being entrepreneurial and recognizes a certain supply and demand. But what's sad about this is that there is such a high demand for that. And the fact that they are making light of the situation of someone being incarcerated with where's the money and joking about it, there's nothing funny about going to prison. I think that, especially in the Black community, when we've got so many of our Black men in prisons as opposed to in college, and, you know, these are alarming statistics that have been plaguing us for years. And here we have another element introduced into this argument, which just desensitizes us to the seriousness of going to jail and coming out with a felony record and the difficulty of finding a job. I mean, these are things. This is a very serious issue, and in the Black community, like BET with their countdown to lockdown with Little Kim, that to me is just. It's just another example
That's
of where we are
desensitizing. Reality television, girl. I don't know what you're talking about.
No, but come on now. So why do we explain it away, though? We explain it away, but then we turn around
the flip side and we complain about how many of us are in jail. The idea that if you believe in redemption, if you believe in the idea that because you make a mistake, you shouldn't be ostracized, this is one of those things that kind of keeps you humanized, if you will. There are those that will tell you if you're in prison, you need a little bit of that.
And I think so. I think it's the connection to family, the connection to community that ultimately will help reduce the recidivism rate, the return to crime that many inmates experience. I had a friend who was visiting Athens and described the prison he saw there in the center of the city. He said it looked like an apartment building because there was children and families in the prison because they believe in Greece that is the key to rehabilitating inmates, not isolating them in prisons where they are violated, like the kind of crimes we're seeing right now in Los Angeles. I think we need to find ways to embrace rather than to further isolate.
Well, nobody's suggesting isolating them, but are we going to start having Hallmark cards for high school dropouts also saying, oh, I'm so sorry you dropped out of high school, because we need to embrace them and love them more? That's not the way to do
it. Actually, I think the card's going to be, if you can't read this, you didn't make it out of high school. But I think what Pedro says, I think, is a good point in terms of what happens once you've actually gotten there. But speaking to your point, Ed, and also combining what Tara said, I mean, I do think it is any kind of signal that sends to our young people that there is a badge of honor, or you know, you can, or as in Little Kim's show, you know, you can figure out how much product that you might be able to sell on your new release because you're about to go to jail. You know, that's the bad aspect of it.
Certainly.
Tara, real quick, the follow-up, you mentioned the idea of the entrepreneurial spirit. One has to believe, though, that obviously there's a huge market for this.
I said that there is supply and demand, and unfortunately, the supply here is the human lives or the destruction thereof of many of our Black brothers and sisters out there that are going to jail.
It's a captive market, actually.
Yeah, right. And it's
no
sad.
Pun intended, right, Robert?
Always.
This is why we don't let you out. Tara Settmeyer, Robert George, Pedro Noguera. Thank you very much for joining us. Greatly appreciate it, guys.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you.